Greetings, my friends, and welcome to The Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm Paula. Challenges to humans' survival are as old as our species. What is new are the multiple threats to human existence on Earth as we know it. Paul Ekman has been researching human emotions for most of his professional career. In 2000, he began a series of conversations with His Holiness the Dalai Lama that changed Dr. Ekman's life. His pessimism turned to thoughtful optimism firmly planted in the perspective of a serious scientist.
We have to do what we can to achieve it. We have to find a way to stop killing each other. We have to find a way to stop destroying the planet. Now, that's not an easy goal to have, but technology has brought us to the brink. We are no longer in the 19th or even early 20th century where we could afford to pollute without worry. Global warming will ruin all of our lives and the lives of our children if we don't stop it. And that's going to take major effort. And with nuclear weapons and their proliferation, we're going to kill everyone a lot more than we want to kill if we don't bring that under. So the world has in some sense caught up to the Buddhist view of interdependence. You know, you could get away with in the 17th, 18th, 19th century thinking, just for me, just my clan, just fellow Englishmen or Americans or whatever. You can't do it anymore. Are we up to the challenge? We have to try. Will we succeed? I don't know, but I'll try. It's all you can do.
And some of that is in seeking emotional awareness, psychological balance, and compassion.
The Dalai Lama says, and I agree with him, if you have self-hatred, you cannot have compassion. You cannot abandon violence if you hate yourself.
More than four decades ago, Paul Ekman's exhaustive and meticulous research demonstrated that facial expressions of emotions are the same in all humans. By opposing received wisdom, he earned the enduring enmity of the psychology establishment. Dr. Ekman continues to challenge established orthodoxies and break fresh ground. Bill Russell and I caught up with him in Vancouver a few hours after another of his conversations with the Dalai Lama.
Paul Ekman, I have had the opportunity over the last 15 years to talk to a lot of people about a lot of things, and I've learned an immense amount. One of the things I've tried to figure out over that time is what makes for truly great art, with the little letters art. And I think perhaps it is elegant simplicity. Time and time and time again, I come back to a play that I think I've seen once, and I never met the author. It is Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, where he says, attention must be paid. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great art?
Yes, I saw that play, and I love that line.
Doesn't that apply across the human condition?
It does. In fact, my wife and I occasionally say that to each other. Attention must be paid. Stop drifting off somewhere else.
Well,
pay attention.
I say that because your work with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, with emotional awareness, your own lifetime of work of paying attention to the musculature, the expression of human emotions, your work with television, there are just a thousand different ways that attention must be paid seems to come into play. Now, tell me why I think that.
Well, it's much easier for us to be attentive to others than to ourselves, particularly in the realm of emotion.
That's not obvious.
Almost all of us, I mean, if we are in an emotional state, that filters our perception of others and biases our perception of others. But if we're not in a very intense emotional state, then paying attention, I mean, if we don't get bored, if it's interesting, it's not very hard. But nature makes it really quite difficult for us to be aware of what's going on within ourselves. And yet it would seem contradictory because most of us have voices that are talking to us.
all the time in my head.
Right. But, you know, right at this moment, there's no voice talking to me. I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And I'm engaged in talking to you. And I don't have a commentator who's talking to me about how I'm talking to you. Did Paula really understand that? What did she really mean? Or none of that's going on.
Because?
I'm engaged. So, being engaged, I'm in the conversation, not in two places at once. I'm not sitting on the couch watching me in the conversation and kibitzing. I'm just talking to you. And when I wrote the book before this one, the Emotions Revealed book, it became clear to me that the key to being able to regulate your own emotions, to be able to choose whether to engage or not, everybody would love to have that choice. Do I care enough? Does it make a difference? Or just let it pass by? Often we don't. In fact, I would say more than often. Typically, we don't. It's a skill that you have to learn and practice like a concert pianist has to practice every day. If you want to recognize the impulse and choose whether to engage or not, you'll have to do a lot of work because nature didn't want you to do that. I mean, suppose while you're driving down the freeway, another car veers towards you and you recognize the impulse and say, well, there's something that could actually destroy me, maybe. What should I do?
Should I be kind?
Should I step on the gas pedal and go faster, or should I take my foot off and hit the brake? Which way should I turn? If you took out the time to think about what to do, you wouldn't survive. And it is one of the interesting questions that I'm at the point in life where I'm recognizing that there's so many interesting questions I'm not going to have the time to work on and try to answer. But suppose you are like the Dalai Lama. You have actually put in the tens of thousands of hours that he has in meditation. He boasted to me today. I don't think it's wrong to say a boast, because I don't think all boasts are bad. Some boasts, I mean, he said, do you know I get 9 hours of sleep every night?
That's worth boasting about.
That's right. I said, boy, that's wonderful. I'm so glad you get 9 hours. You know, maybe once a month I get 9 hours.
Is there something to be learned here?
Well, I think what's to be learned is that he has much more finely tuned control over his own state. Now, I know I was on a path to something else before I gave you his boast.
Well, the whole awareness of oneself having gone through that
right.
Discipline.
So there we are. We're driving down the freeway. By the time we recognize that there was a car threatening us, it's already passed because we've made very complex decisions automatically in milliseconds, and if we didn't, we wouldn't have survived the saber-toothed tiger. It is because there were saber-toothed tigers that we can drive on freeways. That gave us the mechanisms for dealing with sudden threats that had to be dealt with automatically without conscious thought. Now, there's a lot of unconscious appraisal of speed and direction and what we should do, and we do it all without thinking about it. Just like typically, when you drive from one place to another, you don't even remember how you did it. You're listening to the radio, you're having a conversation, you're doing a lot of other things because you've already allowed the other than conscious part of your mind to run the show, and most of the time it does a very good job. However, here's the question. If you learn impulse awareness, so that as impulses arise, you become conscious and make the choice, I'll engage or I'm not going to. My wife's very angry at me today, but I'm not going to get angry back. And in fact, I'm not going to be willing to talk about what she's angry about until she gets past the anger so we can deal with it without the passion that anger involves. If you've learned that ability, is it still safe for you to drive? The Dalai Lama doesn't drive ever. So, you know.
Well, I'm better at it, and I drive pretty much.
Yes, but are you really at the point where you most of the time recognize the impulses before the emotion? That's a very long distance.
That's a master, isn't it?
That is a master. And most of us won't get there. We can approximate it. I'm there maybe 20% of the time. But I'm not as good a driver as I used to be. Now, maybe that's because I'm older.
Maybe it's because you're listening to the radio.
I don't. I turn the radio off now. And most of the time, I won't hold a conversation. But there, you know, it's probably age. It's probably not the little bit of impulse awareness I've gotten. But the two key things, one is to be aware of an emotion as it's arising and choose whether to engage. The second key skill, difficult skill, is if you don't recognize the impulse and you start to act emotionally and your voice starts to get that edge, or if it's anger, or starts to feel really disheartened, if you're discouraged, you begin to pout a little bit, that lower lip, to be at least aware of it. But most of us have the experience that it's not until afterwards that we're aware, or until someone says, "What are you getting so upset about, Paula? I mean, what's really on your mind?" And then you suddenly realize. So those are skills which are really necessary for the lives that we lead now. Clearly, they weren't necessary in the history of our species, or they would be developed already. And what was instead necessary was fast, automatic responses that reflected not only the history of the species, but what we had learned growing up. I mean, there's the other key thing. You want to be well-adjusted, stay in your environmental home. If everybody is like your mother and daddy were, and then you're going to do pretty well because that's what you learned how to deal with.
Yeah, unless it's a dysfunctional mommy and daddy.
Then you've learned how to act towards dysfunctional people, and your problem is going to be that whenever you run into functional people, you're still going to treat them as if they were more dysfunctional people, because some of us have scripts that are unresolved, that come from earlier in our lives, and we are like a director of a movie. We are casting these new people. You're going to be in her role, and you're going to be in his role, and so I've got to run through that same tired old plot all over again, but we don't realize it. And so we're distorting the current world to fit the unresolved world that we're still carrying around.
We're going to come back in a moment to go right there. Nobody else in the world has ever revised Darwin and claimed the copyright on it, except Paul Ekman, who did it wonderfully for all of the world when you updated Charles Darwin in both conceptually and in a wonderful book that was expression of emotions in humans. And I always think
man and animals.
See, I always think of it humans and other animals, but it is
man and animals.
We're going to be back shortly with Paul Ekman. We trust that you'll be here too.